Yo, what is up? You have found We Like the Blazers. I am Brandon Goldner. They call me King Rosacea, and over there through the screen in the United States, it is Rain Whitluge. Rain, what's up, man?
How are you doing, Brandon Goldner?
I'm good, and there's definitely no reason why we're pronouncing each other's names like this. I am King Rosacea. Man, I had a flare-up.
I'm going to have to give you the wife's skincare routine. She has massively battled that throughout the years, and she just found a regimen that's not insanely expensive that has made a massive improvement with her. So, well, off air, I'll have to send you over her regime.
I'm legit not kidding. Do send it to me. It's funny, if you had caught me yesterday, I had grown a Sergeant Pepper mustache to distract people's eyes away from my rosacea flare up, but it's gotten a little bit better. And so I was like, off with the Sergeant Pepper mustache.
I still need to figure out something to do to distract people away from this random effing bald spot I still have in my chin. I trimmed my beard like 3 weeks ago because it got kind of burly.
Right.
And apparently like it had just grown over the spot. And I'm like, what the F is that?
Oh boy.
And it's like all that I see. So like, if I know nobody else is seeing this on camera, but if you see me like doing this a lot, yeah, it's I know it's there, and I'm trying to get it back to the growth, and I'm just like doing comb over stuff to try to cover it.
Well, that is fair. But aside from our skin and beard routines, we have got a special guest. Portland Trailblazers reporter Casey Holdall is joining us. You have obviously heard of his work on The Briefcase, which is his solo kind of quick recap pod. And then also, of course, his work on The Blazers Balcony with Brooke Olsendam, along with all the writing that he does for the team. Before we get into that interview, Ryan, anything else?
Preseason's over. Blazers failed to beat an NBA preseason team. They only win coming against the New Zealand Breakers. How much of the preseason did you watch there, Brandon?
I would say I watched a good 15 to 20% of it, which is not very much, to be completely honest with you.
A good 15 to 20 minutes of it total.
I had a lot going on, and I've seen clips, you know, I've seen the highlights. I would say my takeaway from the preseason is that there's no takeaway. It's tough when your future franchise player is half my age. The man is 19 years old, Ryan.
I know. I try not to do that mental math. It makes me depressed.
It's not great. Obviously, Tumani Kamara is the next MVP of the league, which is exciting. So that was kind of fun to see that. You always want to... When the Blazers are bad, you want to have that one or two player that you are irrationally high on. And for better or worse, Kamara is probably now that guy. So I just don't know. Like, I mean, I'm interested to see what it looks like during the regular season. I'm interested to see what Chauncey Billups can do. Can he actually get some cohesion with a team that is now, you know, should be the type of people that he works really well with? Ant developed a ton last year, so did Shaedon Sharpe, so maybe he'll perform better as coach. So I don't really have an opinion from it.
Some of the most hilarious reactions that I've seen has actually been about Billups. You know, I've seen people like, hey, he was brought in as a defensive minded specialist. Like, he has this new group to mold, but like the defense seems to be worse. And I'm just like wanting to rip my non-existent hair out of like, it's 19, 20 and 22 and 24 year olds. Like, what the F do you expect? Like, you don't mold clay immediately and just be like, all right, I'm done. No more work here. I can take my hands off of this. Like, it's a bit of a process. But for me, the one thing that I have noticed so far that is probably going to be the biggest driver of how much of my time I end up giving to watching this team is the fouls. Like, I love the idea of that this is a young, athletic team that wants to play fast. Fantastic. You can see that they want to, but my God, it's hard when a whistle is blowing every 15 seconds. I think Cassie had a tweet the other day during the final preseason game, and it was his first quarter lasted 36 minutes.
I have to ask, tell me that you just said that on purpose, though. Tell me that you said that on purpose.
No, I don't know. At this point in time, his name's Bob. Leave me alone.
Y'all will find out why I mentioned that in just a second here. Playing fast is cool in theory. Maybe they have the players to do it. I'm skeptical if you don't have the requisite skill to amplify and take advantage of playing fast, then I'm not sure how much good it does you. Like, do you have the shooters? Do you have the vertical threats? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Some of it's injury dependent, some of it's motivation dependent. And so I don't know if, like, yes, it would be cool. Cause look, the times when the Blazers were most successful in their franchise history, Ryan, what was one common thread between the 1977 team and the early 90s teams? They played fast. Fast
breaks. I was just going to say there was a pinwheel on the logo. I was going
to
go.
People who were willing to run, people who could throw hit ahead passes. Bill Walton, the best passing center in the history of the league for a very long time. So it's kind of cool that, like, maybe the, the spirit of the Blazers' best teams could manifest now in Scoot Henderson. We're pinning all our hopes on you, Scoot.
Bill Walton, you say?
As Ryan holds up an autographed basketball, it says Bill Walton Hall of Fame, as if we would forget. But yes, that Bill Walton, it would be great to see them play fast. I don't know. And again, like, the league continues to change. And so, yeah, I think that that's fair. Any other thoughts before we kick it over to our interview with Casey?
Not that I can think of. Let's see what this lovely man has to say with absolutely no mistakes made at all during the recording of this interview.
Absolutely none. Here we go into our interview with Portland Trailblazers reporter Casey Hobel.
So we're joined here by Cassie Holdall. I'm guessing from his car outside
stop,
the practice.
Stop. What? You don't miss
it's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
What? Did I say
you said Cassie and it's Casey, but you know, it's
all
right.
All right, fine. We have editing.
I called Malcolm Brogdon Rob Williams today. So, like, okay. You know, it happens.
This is all staying in then. Okay, good.
Okay.
It.
All right. So moving on, we're just going to pretend like that never happened. So it looks like you're joining us outside the parking lot of the practice facility. If I have to take a guess.
You are correct. Okay, correct. Yes. This time of year, between practices and preparation for the season, like, every minute counts. And so, yes, I'm doing this from my car because I didn't even have time to get back to a place where I would have felt better about the Wi-Fi. So I apologize for that. But yeah, you're seeing how the preseason sausage gets made here in the content world.
Wait a second. I'm in New Zealand. Why are the leaves on the trees still green? Isn't it the late October at this point? I mean, what? Don't know.
It's 80 today, bitch.
Yeah, it's not good. No, exactly. That's, I mean, while it's nice to have a little reprieve. Yeah, it probably should be turning by now. I will say that it's two nice days now after it being torrential downpours for like the past week before that. But I agree with you, Brandon. It always gets a little concerning for me where I'm like, why is it still comfortable at the end of October? Like it should be miserable by now.
That just means 2 feet of snow this December, if I'm remembering correctly.
It's El Nino this year, so it's going to be warm and incredibly wet is what they're already predicting. So we might not get snow, but flooding seems like a real possibility.
Oh, joy. So I'm curious, especially from your angle, what it was like for you. Because for one, you're pretty vocal and you interact a lot on social media. But what it was like for you, for somebody in your position, to have gone through the offseason that the Trailblazers just went through and like all of the events surrounding the Dame drama and whatnot. And was it hard to just kind of sit back and hold your thumbs back from the good old tweet or zeet buttons or whatever the heck we're calling them these days?
Actually, the exact opposite. It was almost freeing a little bit because it was something that I knew that it wasn't really my place to probably talk about it a whole lot. And, you know, all the stuff, particularly stuff coming out of Miami, I know I would make a few references to it here and there, but, you know, like I'm not out trying to throw stones at other guys doing the job. I mean, generally you do the job to your best of your ability. And I respect that, but you know, this situation was like, since it was something that there was already a lot of talk about, how much are you supposed to talk about Dame's camp being like, you know, getting kind of their hand slapped by the league at that point, it's like, we all got to kind of do what we're supposed to do here. And what we're supposed to do in these kind of situations is to really let the process play out. And so for me, it never felt like I was like, oh, I gotta put my opinion in this. But one, because like, I just didn't feel like, particularly for someone in my position, that's the right thing to do. But two, you know, the Dame stuff has just been going on for so long. I mean, this summer it obviously reached ahead, but three, four summers before that, every single summer was like, well, what's going to happen? He's going to leave. Will he, won't he? And so for me, it's like, anything that I already had to say about that, I had already gotten out of my system. And, you know, when you know these people personally, like it, you know, that's the part for me where it gets a little frustrating, because, you know, you see things that reported that you're like, I know that's not true. Like, but other than that, it's like the whole like process of how was it going to play out? Like it, I didn't mind not kind of being a part of that, because I think particularly the way it played out, you kind of realized, as I realized a long time ago, that this is all speculation and table setting from different organizations. It's got nothing to do with the actual truth or what is actually going to end up happening. And those are the things that I'm interested in. Like all of the kind of the scuttlebutt rumor mongering around that's stuff that I stopped caring about that stuff a long time ago, and that's all it was this summer. So from that perspective, it was actually really easy for me to not do anything. Like I was fine to let that play out.
I'm actually curious, and I'll give it back to Ryan after this, but like, you've been in your role for a very long time. Damn, what, 15 years? How long has it been?
I mean, this is my 17th season with the team, and I've done 17. A few different things here and there, but for the most part, I mean, digital content has been the name of the game for the entirety of it. Yeah.
Totally. And like for any reporter, there's like a certain amount of, you know, political awareness and kind of mindfulness in your role that you need. But I think it's particularly true of someone like you, who's also a representative of the team. And I'm just curious, in the time you've been doing this, what is something that you've learned about yourself, or in what ways have you found that you've grown as a person because of the role that you've been in for, you know, 17 years?
Yeah, I think, for me, more than anything, you know, when I was, and maybe this is just this happens to everyone when you get older, but like, you know, I've always been very forward with my opinions about things. I tend to believe that I'm usually right about things. And I think for the most part, I generally am. But what I've learned in this job throughout the years is that, you know, you really need to be open to the idea that like, you actually don't know as much as you think you do. And a lot of times too, and it's not even like about being right or wrong necessarily, or about like what the truth is or what it isn't. It's just that a lot of times like things change. And so what you thought was real, or what might've even been real one week, might not necessarily be what's real the next week. And when you're too kind of entrenched in those opinions and thoughts and the intel that you've collected, I've just found throughout my career that a lot of times, like, you need to be a lot more flexible than that. And people might not be lying to you, and generally they're not lying to you. They just might not know the answers either. In sports, a lot of people want to act like they know what they're talking about, or that they're kind of in the game. So, you know, there's always that piece as well that you have to be a little cognizant of. But for me, it was really understanding. And when I learned this, and this is something that I've actually thought about a lot that I haven't really mentioned, that kept coming up during the Dame thing, was when Kevin Pritchard was the general manager and the end of his tenure. And I don't know if you guys remember, there was a reporter at a Yahoo who was really like, this guy's in trouble. Something's going to happen here. There's going to be a parting of ways, who was a younger Adrian Wojnarowski. And everyone in market, myself included, was like, what's this guy talking about? Like, everything's great. Kevin is dialed in. He, like, I don't know where this is coming from. We were all wrong. And he was right. And it was one of those situations where it was like, our conventional wisdom of what that situation was completely wrong. And so I learned a valuable lesson way back then that was like, hey man, like, you might be with the team. People might tell you stuff. Like, you might feel like you have a good handle on all these things, and you should trust yourself generally, but you also really need to understand that you might have things wrong sometimes, and it's not going to benefit you, and it's not going to benefit your readership or the people that listen to you, for you to be so, again, just dead set about what you think you know, because sometimes those things change, and you need to at least be willing to change with those things, and to not have such an ego that like, I know what the answer is, you know, because sometimes there's not an answer. Sometimes if there is an answer, it changes. And again, those are just things that, like, whenever I see guys covering the league who are so just like, this is the way it is, I'm just like, man, wait 10 minutes, man, because like things change and you're going to find that out eventually. So why go so hard on like, I'm right about this thing? Because you might be wrong about it.
And it sounds like you need to be imaginative about the many different ways in which stuff can happen or could be. I mean, how does that impact your work as you're trying to deliver something to fans that kind of like, you need to be open and imaginative about why stuff is happening? How does that actually show up in your work?
I mean, for me, it shows up by like trying to take different angles into things too, and really not really trying to, you know, like explore a little bit more, particularly with players, like who they are outside of the court. I know everyone kind of talks about that, but I don't feel like anyone kind of goes as far into it as I do. So like the thing that I remember is like writing that candle story during the playoffs in Denver, you know, like just like for me, part of it is about being open to just like all different kinds of content forms. But another part of it is being able to switch gears a little bit and understanding that like, sometimes you think you might know things, you might be wrong about those things. Focus on something that you can be right about, you know, like, and sometimes those things are the non-basketball parts of it. So I don't even know if I'm exactly answering the question you're posing to me right now, Brandon, but that's one of the things that I kind of have always thought about is that like, if it's always just about the basketball, like it's one, it's going to be burned out. And two, like you just don't, everyone's life in an organization is about more than that. And
they're people.
Well, right. You know? Exactly. And, like, and so, and like, there's just this idea that it's the most important. It has to be the most important thing. And I think for a lot of guys it is, but I also think it's really important to remember that they're humans and it's like, it is a game and you know, and it's entertainment too. And you know, the point of the game isn't always like, to figure out who the best team is. The point is to entertain your fans while also generally find out who the best team is. And, you know, that can go in a lot of different directions, a lot of different ways. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. So, you know, that's, and I've always felt lucky in my role too, that like I've been given the latitude to kind of figure out different ways to approach things. So I've been lucky in that regard, whereas maybe some other people who work for teams especially might not have had those same options.
Yeah. And, you know, because providing that human lens to just the sport. So you're not staring at just names on a jersey and whatnot and going, oh, well, that guy's only worth like 12 points. Be like, well, yeah, hey, but here's this family and here's everything that he's done for them and what this job has allowed him to do for, you know, help his brother open a business or do all this other stuff. So like just given that like human element. And so a little bit of an awkward pivot now. Brandon's previous question would have been a great pivot, but that no.
Sorry, man.
you know, for some unknown reason, we've noticed that the media landscape in general since about 2015, 2016 has massively changed. No one will ever know why. But I noticed it especially now more in sports journalism and sports reporting, where it's almost like everyone is trying to take news that they see and try to figure out the angle that somebody's working, you know, it's, hey, this is a mouthpiece for so-and-so or this person isn't as plugged in or this person, you know what they're just in it for an agenda. Heck, the agenda thing I see a lot with, you know, Danny and all his stuff that he's been doing. Everyone's like, oh, well, you're just trying to get a cushy job with the team. But I'm curious your take on how you've, with having been in this industry for as long as you have, how you've seen it change so far. And do you think that it's changing in a good way, a bad way, and kind of where you maybe see it going from here?
Yeah. I mean, my preface to that would be that like good work is good work, you know, and people that are doing a good job now are doing really the same things that people who were doing a good job 30 years were doing. And so like that part of the job, I feel like hasn't changed. I have seen a change and this is might sound especially weird coming from someone who works for a team and, you know, kind of in a lot of ways, I don't know if we've ushered this in and I hope it isn't necessarily our fault, but it does seem to me over the last 5-6 years, especially, that you know, the real focus on, like, I'm writing this story, not as a favor to the player and the agent, but just the idea that, like, the relationship is the part that matters to the person writing the story, not the story itself. Mm-hmm. And really kind of leaning all the way into more like, I'm just going to tell this story from the player's perspective without trying to get any broader perspective about what the actual scenario might be. So, like, the notion of access journalism and, you know, someone who traffics in access journalism, my access is predicated on the idea that I'm not going to do things that are going to, you know, look especially bad for the team. We can be honest, but, you know, we shouldn't really kind of get over our skis about some things. It feels like that's really been adopted by some other journalists in some other markets, where it's like that notion of objectivity. And I realize that there's debates about that in journalism broadly about, can you be objective? Should you even try to be objective? Mm-hmm. But it does seem to me that there's a lot of one-sided quote unquote reporting now that is only kind of player focused, because that's who you need to have the relations with. It's the players for the most part. Like, and yeah, there are guys who traffic with general managers, but for the most part, it's like the players are what matter in the NBA more so than I think than any other league. And so I'm just going to make sure that, like, this player is cool with me. And whatever that takes to do, what do I need to do to ensure that, regardless of what that means for the actual work I'm turning out, I don't care. Like, if the player likes what it is, then I think it's good work. Like, even as someone who works for a team, I don't think that is a good place for the industry to go. Like, I think everyone is better off when there is kind of more standard journalistic practices when it comes to sports content. And I will say too, that, like, it is sports. And so, like, I do understand the idea that, like, it's pretty low stakes. So, like, is it really that big of a deal if, you know, a rosier interpretation of situations is kind of given as the truth? No, it's not that big of a deal. But again, I think the other option is better. And I think that in the long run, fans, players, coaches, organizations, executives, I think they're all better served when we have a media landscape that is a bit skeptical about things. Like, that's the way that this thing works the best.
Well, journalism was always meant, I mean, the joke was always that's the fourth branch of government, because it was always the thing that provided the check on, you know, everything. Right. So
exactly.
And, you know, along those lines too, I'm curious to get your take, because you have the absolute uniquest perspective on this. You know, and nowadays you're seeing a little bit more of a rise of a lot more independent journalism. I'm not talking about in regards of, you know, people that are going to Substack, but people that, you know, Goldner and I don't have delusions of grandeur about anything, but you're seeing a lot more people that are starting things and actually gaining traction and starting to report things themselves. What's your take on, like, the kind of growth of the, you know, the little guy journalism per se?
I mean, I think that is great. The only thing I see from it is that it does seem like a lot of it is, I feel like I'm seeing a lot now that, like, people will kind of develop a little bit of a following on social, and then, like, they'll get some DMs from a player, and then it'll be like, oh, now I know this guy. And, like, so, like, for your, I think if you're really interested in doing it right, and there are guys that are doing it right, I think that's a great way to go. If you're more interested in just, like, people knowing who you are and feeling like you have a little bit of access and the way that that makes you feel outside of, like, actually really doing a job other than passing along the rumors you're hearing on Twitter, that I do not think is a very, very good place for the industry to go. And I don't necessarily think it's going that direction. And there's some people that have kind of made that jump that do it well, but mm-hmm. I think that's a very small minority. And I think that it's much more likely to go bad than it is to work out well. Having said that though, with the state of financing in journalism, like, anyone that can go out and do work that's even halfway decent and make a living, particularly if they're doing it for themselves, more power to you. Like, and I don't think it's that big of a deal as long as people just approach it with a decent amount of media literacy, which is that, you know, as long as you at least consider where something is coming from and the way that that might change how that information is portrayed to you, then great. Like, I'm not, it still has value. It's just, you need to kind of have a, a base understanding of like, well, in the most cynical parts, what would be the reason for this getting passed along? And I think as long as you're, again, as long as you understand that and don't take anything you read or you hear as gospel and more like, well, this is a piece of a puzzle that can inform my understanding of a situation, then I think everyone has a role to play in that, particularly people who are kind of self-employed or, you know, like are friends with a family member of a player, which I think, you know, we've kind of seen more and more throughout the years, particularly as kind of the industry traditionally kind of falters, people kind of rise up to kind of fill that gap. And again, those people I think are without the checks and balances in place, which I would also say too, like, the notion that the newspapers 50 years ago had strict journalistic standards that they never, you know, went against, that's also BS too. Like, you know, the industry has always had its problems, but now there's just so few checks that I think as long as you go into it understanding that, I think that brand of journalism is just fine. And again, I think it's important. I just think people should understand where it comes from. The reason I say that is because I'll see some things now that people kind of put out there on the street where I'm like, hey, if my team came to me and said like, hey, will you put this out there? I'd be like, guys, no, like there has to be at least a whiff of legitimacy. And if we're just like trying to like set a table for something we're trying to do and it's a complete fabrication or it's something that I know is not true, it's like, again, that might be a short-term benefit for somebody. It's not a benefit for our fans, and I don't think organizationally it would be a benefit either. So like, I guess what I'm saying is I see some stuff every now and then now where I'm like, I wouldn't even do that. And I work for the team. Like, so I don't know where the line is for some of you guys, but you passed it a long time ago.
I will get you out of here on this one. Cause, cutting close to your heart out here. I'm curious what your recommendation would be for fans on how they should, you know, kind of watch this team this year. I've seen, you know, Vegas has their over under season win total, I think 28.5. And there's a lot of debate on either this team is going to, you know, take a year or two or three. It's the youngest team in the league. And then there is some just wildly blind optimism of, I could see this team being a seventh seed. And I'm trying to save fans some sanity and some undue angst. I want your professional opinion as somebody who has seen this on what is a realistic expectation and how should fans try to approach this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think, you know, the players and the coach have talked about this a lot because I've been kind of asking for kind of what I'm going to write before the season. Like what would be a successful season for this team? You know, like what for you, if this happened, it would constitute success. And, you know, everyone's like, hey, we want to win games. Like this idea, particularly guys like Ant, guys like Jeremy, guys who have been here before, even, you know, a guy like Malcolm to a lesser extent, you know, their first part of that answer is always like, hey, like, we feel like we're a pretty good team. We feel like we're going to play hard. We're not going out there assuming that we're just going to be a bad team. We're not out there playing for draft picks. And that's something that you guys know well too, that like, players don't care about getting draft picks. Like they want to win. And
they don't
no
want their
player
replacement coming in.
Exactly. The idea that like, oh, I'm going to be happy to lose, to play bad basketball, to make myself look worse in order to bring in someone who's also going to supplant me, like that, players don't view it that way ever. I've never come across a single one that views it that way. So, I mean, there's always that piece, but there is an honesty about like where the team is at right now and what they want to do going forward. And so for me, I think the important thing as a fan of this team is like, I just want to see this team make progress and growth. And I want to see them play hard on a night to night basis. And I think those are pretty good benchmarks to start the season with. Like I don't, from a win loss perspective, I wouldn't even bother, you know, like I don't think that really matters all that much this year. I think the way they play matters. I think the growth of Scoot, the growth of Shaden, kind of Ant taking that next step, seeing what they have in DeAndre Ayton, seeing what they have in Rob Williams. I think those are really the parts where you focus on that and consider what those players do. That really defines more what success is about this team than are they going to be in the race for the play-in, you know, with a month left to go in the season. And, you know, you know, and Chauncey talks about it as well. He's like, look, like, I don't view rebuilding as meaning losing. I don't view developing as losing. I think he literally said that at practice today. But he also understands the situation this team is in. He's been around the league a while, both as a player, as a coach. So he understands the kind of the way things go. And I think, you know, if you're a fan who the only way to gauge success is by wins and losses, I think this year might be a tough one for you. And, I would just say try to derive something else from it, you know, like, and if that's really all that matters to you, like that, that's cool. Like there's nothing wrong with being a very like results oriented fan. And I think particularly after the last couple of seasons, the way that it's ended, like, again, I don't fault anyone for being like, hey, I want to see this team actually start to win. You know, like there's absolutely nothing wrong with feeling that way. I think you just might be setting yourself up a little bit for aggravation this time around when you might want to kind of view more of the ancillary parts of the game. And again, figuring out like, because that was a complaint people had about the Blazers, you know, is that it's like, they're fairly consistent. They were going to make the playoffs every year, but no one really felt all that good about their chances of really doing anything in the postseason. And at that point it was like, well, hey, what's the point? What's the point of being the 8 seed if you're going to get bounced in 5 games? Like what does that really do for us? How does that get us to our long-term goal of being a championship team?
And 54% of the time, right? No.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think having been in that situation too, I do think Blazer fans are maybe a little better equipped to kind of go in this direction now than they were before, because I think anyone again who's kind of watched the team for the last 5-6 years is like, yeah, you know, we know that Dame's going to be great. We know that, you know, they're going to make a run at some point in time, and they're probably going to be a little bit better than people think, but we're not going to be a team that we feel strongly about having a chance to really advance in the postseason. And now you have a team where it's going to be harder to even get to the postseason in these next couple of years. But I don't know that if by time they get to the point of this process, call it a rebuild, a reboot, whatever you want to call it, kind of a redirection, a pivot. When they get to that in 3 years, I think people are going to feel much better about the chances this team has of being a contender in the postseason than they did any time in the last 5 or 6 years, maybe outside of the season they went to the Western Conference Finals. So I think, you know, preaching patience is tough, particularly when the past 2 seasons have gone the way they've gone. But I do think that if you're a fan who's interested in seeing this team actually reach some higher heights other than just maybe winning 50 games, then I think that's the prism with which to look through this season. How are they getting towards that goal of being a team that at some point in time could really legitimately compete for a championship? And I think you see that more out of growth this season than, you know, being the 8th or 9th seed.
Well, Cassie, I thank you for your time, for allowing a little bit.
Ryan.
I got it.
No, he did. That was on purpose, right? Like that's a good situation.
In all honesty, one of my cousins is named Casey, so it's also written spells the exact same way. So it's
man,
hard
he's
for me
not
going to
come
that.
Back on the show at this point.
So no. I do want to tell you guys. So, you know, I try to know the people who work in the arena, like. They're my people, like the security guards, the people that work in concessions, like those are my people. Like that's where I come from. And so I really try to make a point to like know these people. And there's a security guard who works outside the family room. So, you know, players, their family, they come, they put the kids in like a little locker area so they can hang out, have food, whatever. And so there's a regular guy who is out front of that door. And I know him fairly well. And I saw him at media day. And I was like, oh, Sean, how's it going, man? He's like, oh, it's going great. You know, things are well. You know, we kind of shoot the S for a minute. I get home that night. I'm like, wait a minute. That Sean isn't his name. His name is Casey. And literally, I knew it was something Irish. And like, but it screwed me up because since my name is Casey, I was like, that's too easy in that moment. So I was like, it must be something else. Yeah. And so then the next day I go and I was like, I think I called you Sean the other day. He's like, you did. And I was like, Casey, I'm really sorry that it, because so like legitimately someone I know who has the same name as me I still managed to get wrong. So Ryan, you can call me Cassie all you want, man. Like it's no thing.
Well, I thank you for your time. You know, like I was saying, a peek behind a little bit of like the journalism. I always like getting those perspectives of the people that are in the fields when we talk to them, just kind of like give a peek behind the curtain of their area of expertise. And also I very much thank you for for joining the bandwagon of talking Goldner off his optimistic ledge of that this could be a play-in team.
I'm not trying to stop you. I'm just saying, like, prepare yourself.
As the guy who has to deal with his emotional fallout when they maybe don't reach that, I'm just trying to keep him in check. So I very much thank you for your time. We'll try to chat again at some point in time later on down the season. And thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again to Casey. Oh, I was still going back.
Now you have me. Is it Casey or Cassie? Now I'm doubting myself. What side did I fuck it up on?
It's Casey.
That's what I said at first, and then y'all called me out on it.
No. You said Cassie. You said Cassie twice with him. Then you said Cassie again here. It's very funny. I'm laughing. It's okay. We are back. Let's leave all that in there. I don't know. We'll see
how the audio editing goes. Fuck it, whatever.
But listen, and like you said, I mean, he literally called somebody the wrong name, even though that person's name was Casey and his name is Casey. So we all make mistakes. It's really not a big deal. And he's cool. I always appreciate talking with Casey. He is honestly like one of my favorites and somebody who, frankly, I kind of look up to because I didn't get enough time to ask him even more about it. But that emotional maturity part, how do you navigate such a highly political job working for a team and representing a team, and you're surviving multiple administrations, so to speak, of different leadership, and people have different proclivities and where they want to focus their media. And he's been there for 17 years. I don't know, like he's an impressive person. I appreciate his time. The Blazers play their first regular season game on Wednesday, 25th of October. That is going to be away against the Los Angeles Clippers. One question for you, Ryan. Will the Clippers be fielding one Mr. Jimothy Harden when the Blazers play the Clippers on that fateful Wednesday?
Obviously not. The Sixers just hired Harden's old high school, you know, favorite man, the free agent, Neil Olshey, as a consultant. So he's going nowhere.
The same day that Terry Stotts unexpectedly resigns as assistant head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, which is very strange. Like, I'd love to hear more about that, but that is really weird, man. Like, I don't know. What do you, if I'm Joel Embiid, I'm like, what is going on? I don't think that like Neil Olshey coming into your organization, whether he's a consultant or whatever, I don't think that's a good sign. Like,
yeah, between the Olshey news and then the actual picture of the Sixers releasing their city edition jerseys, the city of brotherly love,
the Philadelphia brotherlies.
NBA needs to rein this in. I know it's a cash grab that they do every year where they want to get these city edition jerseys out. They're limited run, force fans to go and spend another hundred and whatever some odd dollars on, you know, this latest edition. But if these things are just going down the toilet farther and farther, like just at this point,
are they doing it on purpose? I don't know.
I can't imagine so, because Nike doesn't have many misses with their stuff. And so to just, I don't know. It's they just got to stop it. And like,
everyone is worse than the next. Like, I'm actually impressed on how many of these are just really bad. I'm scared.
They just need to pick for what the Blazers are gonna look like. Like, what they need to do now, because they were all limited releases, fine. If you want money, keep them as limited releases. New players will come in, yada, yada, yada. They need to put it to like every team gets a fan vote. Put it up on their team website and be like, pick your top five or like top three of our city edition jerseys. And then grand total, take the top five out of that and just do a yearly rotation. So, hey, this year we're going to go back to the Oregon City ones. But now guess what? You can get a Scoot Oregon one. You know, you can get a Scoot, the throwback, like the Mellow Years jerseys ones. You can get them in the new players. You can still get that money coming in. But you don't have to rethink the wheel every freaking year because you're just running the wheel into the ground right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And so, okay, so the Blazers open against the Los Angeles Clippers in LA. We'll see what happens. I agree with what you said during the interview. actually you and Casey both saying like, look, you have to watch this season differently, and maybe not look for just wins and losses. And so it's going to take some time. We will be back telling you all about that on the next episode, whenever that is, at some point in the not too distant future. If you want to get a hold of us, you can always do that on Twitter. Yes. Twitter at GoldnerPDX or the Witty Ryan or at Like the Blazers. You can also find us at welikethablazers.com or welikethablazers@gmail.com. That's a lot of different things. So until next time, thank you so much to Casey Holdall. Thank you, Ryan. I'm Brandon. I appreciate you all. And until then, go Blazers.
Go Blazers.